"James," I'd gasped, but recovered quickly. "You look great." We'd hugged, to gawking Ashley's surprise. "Yes, I'm sure," I told Jillian. "It'll be good for me. Call it a growth experience.
Plus, I don't want to give up the commission. We'll see what happens tonight."
At that, she looked up from her menu.
"Tonight?"
"Oh, didn't I tell you? We're going for drinks to get caught up." I stood in front of the mirror, fluffing my hair and checking my teeth for wayward lipstick. The rest of the workday had gone quickly, and now I found myself at home getting ready for tonight. We'd agreed to just have drinks, very casual, although I was leaving the option open for dinner. But skinny jeans, black turtleneck, and cropped gray leather jacket was as fancy as I was gonna get. The time I'd spent this morning with James at the office was pleasant, and when he'd asked me to go for drinks to catch up, I agreed instantly. I was anxious to learn what he'd been up to, as well as make sure we'd be able to work together. He'd been a huge part of my life at one time, and the idea of being able to work with someone I'd once been so close to felt good to me. It felt mature. Closure? Not sure what to call it, but it seemed like the natural thing to do. He was picking me up at 7, and I planned to meet him outside. Parking on my street was ridiculous. A glance at the clock told me it was time to get going, so I gave a quick kiss goodbye to Clive, who'd been on his best behavior since the pee incident, and I let myself into the hallway, and straight into Simon, who was in front of my door.
"Okay, you are officially my stalker. There's no more zucchini bread, mister. I hope you made that loaf last, because there's no more for you," I warned, pressing him back from my front door with my pointer finger.
"I know, I know. I'm actually here on official business,"
he laughed, throwing up his arms in defeat. "Walk with me?" I asked, nodding toward the stairs.
"I'm headed out as well. Going to rent a movie,"
he explained as we started down.
"People still rent movies?" I joked, rounding the corner. "Yes, people still rent movies. Just for that, you're gonna have to watch whatever I pick out," he replied, raising an eyebrow.
"Tonight?"
"Sure. Why not? I was coming over to see if you wanted to hang out. I owe you for dinner from last night, and I got an urge to watch something spooky."
He launched into the Twilight Zone theme. I couldn't help but laugh at his claw hands and crossed eyes. Last time someone asked me to rent a movie, it was code for, "Let's make out on the couch."
"Am I safe with you?" "Please. We've got that truce, remember? I am all about the truce. So, tonight?"
"I wish I could, but I have plans tonight. Tomorrow night?" We rounded the last stair and entered the entryway.
"Tomorrow, I can do. Come on over after work, but I get to pick the movie, and I'm making you dinner. Least I can do for my little cock blocker."
He smirked, and I punched him in the arm.
"Please stop calling me that.
Otherwise I won't bring dessert,"
I said, lowering my voice and batting my eyelashes like a fool.
"Dessert?" he asked,
holding the door open as I walked out into the night.
"Mm-hmm.
I picked up some apples yesterday while I was out, and I've been craving pie all week."
"How does that sound?"
I asked, scanning the street for James.
"Apple pie? Homemade apple pie? Christ, woman, are you trying to kill me?" "Mmm."
He smacked his lips and looked at me hungrily.
"Why, sir, you look like you've seen something you'd like to eat,"
I offered in my best scarlet.
"You show up with apple pie tomorrow night, and I may not let you leave,"
he breathed, his cheeks rosy and his messy hair blowing in the cool air.
That would be terrible, I whispered.
Wow.
Okay, so go get your movie, I said, playfully shoving the 6 feet of hot in front of me. Remember the harem, I shouted inside my head.
Caroline,
a concerned voice came from behind me, and I turned to see James walking toward us. Hey, James, I called out, stepping away from Simon with a giggle.
You ready to go?
He asked, looking at Simon carefully. Simon straightened to his full height and looked back just as carefully.
Yep, ready to go.
Simon, this is James. James, Simon. They leaned in to shake hands, and I could see that they both exerted a little extra force, neither seeming to want to be the one to let go first. I rolled my eyes.
Yes, boys, you can both write your names in the snow. The question is, who would make bigger letters?
Nice to meet you, James. It was James, right?
I'm Simon. Simon Parker.
That's correct.
James. James Brown.
I saw the beginnings of a laugh on Simon's face.
Okay, James, we should get going.
Simon, I'll talk to you later, I interrupted, ending the handshake of the century. James turned toward where his car was double-parked, and Simon looked at me.
Brown? James Brown? He mouthed, and I squelched my own laugh.
Shush, I mouthed back, smiling at James when he turned back to me.
Nice to meet you, Simon. See you around,
James called, steering me to the car with his hand on the small of my back. I didn't think twice about it, as that's how we always used to walk together. But Simon's eyes widened a little at the sight. James opened the door for me, then headed around to his side. Simon was still standing in front of our building when we drove away. I rubbed my hands together in front of the heater and grinned at James as he steered through the traffic.
So, where are we headed?
We made ourselves comfortable in the swanky bar he'd selected. It seemed very James, chic and sophisticated and laced with hidden sexuality. The deep red leather banquettes, thinly cushioned and cool, ensconced us as we settled in and began the process of getting to know each other after so many years apart. As we waited for a server to come by, I studied his face. He still looked the same, closely cropped sandy blonde hair, intense eyes, and a lean frame folded in on itself like a cat's. Age had only improved his good looks, and his carefully torn jeans and black cashmere sweater clung to a body I could see was in great shape. James had been a rock climber, relentless in his pursuit of the sport. He viewed each boulder, each mountain, as an obstacle to overcome, something to be conquered. I'd gone climbing with him a few times toward the end of our relationship, even though I grew up skittish about heights. But watching him climb, seeing the sinewy muscles stretch and manipulate his body into positions that seemed unnatural, was a heady experience, and I'd pounced on him those evenings in the tent like a woman possessed.
"What are you thinking about?"
he asked, interrupting my musings. "I was thinking about how much you used to climb. Is that something you still do?"
"It is. But I don't get as much free time as I used to. They keep me pretty busy at the firm. I try and get out to Big Basin as often as I can," he added, smiling as our waitress approached.
"What can I get you to?" she asked, placing napkins in front of us.
"She'll have a dry vodka martini, 3 olives, and for me bring 3 fingers of Macallan," he answered.
The waitress nodded and left to fill our order. I studied him as he sat back, then turned his gaze to me.
"Oh, Caroline, I'm sorry. Is that still your drink?"
I narrowed my eyes at him. As it happens, yes. But what if I didn't want that tonight? I answered primly.
My mistake. Of course. What did you want to drink?
He waved the waitress back over. I'll have a dry vodka martini with 3 olives, please, I told her with a wink. She looked confused. James laughed loudly, and she walked away, shaking her head.
Touché, Caroline. Touché, he said, studying me again.
So, tell me what you've been up to the last few years. I put my elbows on the table and chin in my hands.
How to encapsulate years in a few sentences? Finished law school, signed on with the firm here in the city, and worked like a dog for 2 years. I've been able to ease up a bit, only around 65 hours a week now, and it's nice seeing daylight again, I admit.
He grinned, and I couldn't help but smile back.
And, of course, working as much as I do leaves me very little time for a social life, so it was just blind luck that I saw you at the benefit last month,
he finished, leaning forward on his elbows as well. Jillian attended many social events around town, and I accompanied her on occasion. Good for business. I should have known I'd eventually run into James at one of those shindigs. So, you saw me, but you didn't come talk to me. And now here you are, weeks later, asking me to work on your condo.
Why is that, exactly?
I accepted my drink as it arrived and took a long pull.
I wanted to talk to you, believe me, but I couldn't. So much time had passed. Then I realized you worked for Jillian, who a friend had recommended to me, and I thought, how perfect.
He inclined his glass toward mine for a clink. I paused for a moment, then clinked him. So you're serious about working with me? This isn't some kind of ploy to get me into bed, is it? He looked at me evenly.
Still direct as ever, I see. But no, this is professional. I didn't like the way we left things, admittedly, but I accepted your decision. And now, here we are. I need a decorator. You are a decorator. Works out well, don't you think?
Designer, I said quietly.
What's that?
Designer, I said, louder this time. I'm an interior designer, not a decorator. There's a difference, Mr. Attorney Man. I took another sip.
Of course,
he replied, signaling for the waitress. Surprised, I looked down to find my glass empty.
Care for another?
He asked, and I nodded. As we small-talked for the next hour, we also began to discuss what he needed in his new home. Jillian had been right. He was pretty much asking me to design his entire place, from area rugs to lighting fixtures and everything in between. It would be a huge commission, and he'd even agreed to let me photograph it for a local design magazine Jillian had been wanting me to submit to. James came from a wealthy family, the Browns of Philadelphia, don't you know, and I knew they must be footing the bill for most of this. Young lawyers didn't make enough to afford the kind of place he had, let alone in one of the most expensive cities in America. But trust funds live on, and he had a large one. One of the perks of dating him in college had been that we could actually afford real dates, not just cheap takeout all the time. I'd enjoyed that aspect of being with him, not gonna lie. And I would enjoy that aspect of this project. A basically unlimited budget? I couldn't wait to get started. In the end, it was a nice evening. As with all old flames, there was a feeling of knowing, a nostalgia you can share only with someone who has known you intimately, especially at that age when you're still forming. It was great to see him again.
James has a very strong personality, intense and confident, and I was reminded why I'd been attracted to him in the first place. We laughed and told stories about things we'd done as a couple, and I was relieved to find that his charm remained. We could get along quite well in a social setting. There was none of the awkwardness that could have accompanied this. As the evening wound down and he drove me home, he got around to the question I knew he'd been dying to ask. He pulled the car to a stop in front of my building and turned to me.
"So, are you seeing anyone?" he asked quietly.
"No, I'm not." "And that's hardly a question a client would ask me," I teased, and looked toward my building. I could see Clive sitting in the front window in his usual post, and I smiled. It was nice to have someone waiting for me. I couldn't stop myself from glancing next door to see if there was a light on in Simon's apartment, and I also couldn't stop my tummy from doing a little flippity-flop when I saw his shadow on the wall and the blue light of his television.
"Well, as your client, I'll refrain from asking those kinds of questions in the future, Ms. Reynolds."
He chuckled. I turned back to face him. "It's okay, James. We passed designer-client relationship a long time ago." I felt triumphant as I saw a blush carve a chink in his careful facade.
"I think this is going to be fun."
It was my turn to laugh.
"Okay, you can call me tomorrow at the office and we'll get started. I'm going to fleece you blind, buddy. Get ready to work that credit card," I taunted as I stepped out of the car. "Oh, hell, I'm counting on it."
He winked and waved goodbye. He waited until I was inside, so I tossed another wave his way as the door closed. I was glad to see I could handle myself with him. Upstairs, as I turned the key in my lock, I thought I heard something. I looked over my shoulder, and there was nothing there. Clive called to me from inside, so I smiled and stepped in, scooping him up and whispering softly in his ear as he gave me a tiny cat hug with his big paws around my neck. The next evening, I was rolling out the pie crust when the text came in from Simon.
"Come on over whenever. I'll start dinner once you're here."
"I'm still working on the pie, but I'll be over soon."
"Need any help?"
"How are you with peeling apples?" The next thing I heard was a knock on the door. I walked over, hands covered in flour, and elbowed the door open.
"Well, hello there," I said, holding the door open with my foot.
"Looks like the end of Scarface in here," he observed, reaching out to touch my nose and show me the flour on the end.
"I tend to lose control when there's pie crust involved," I said as he shut the door.
"Duly noted. That's good information for me to have," he responded, swatting at my hand as I tried to slap him.
He took a good long look at me then, blue eyes dropping from my face and traveling across my body.
You weren't kidding about the apron. I don't know how long I'll be able to hang in here without trying a little grab-ass."
"Get in there and grab an apple, buddy," I said, and walked toward the kitchen, adding a little extra swish to my hips.
I heard him sigh heavily. I glanced down at my outfit, noting my tank top, old jeans, bare feet, and chef's apron that said,
"You should see my scones." "Now, when you said grab an apple, what exactly were you referring to?"
he asked from the kitchen, where he'd started taking off his sweater. I shook my head at the sight of Simon in a black T-shirt and weathered jeans. He was in his stocking feet once again, and I marveled at how at ease he seemed in my kitchen. I walked around the kitchen counter and picked up my rolling pin.
"You know, I won't think twice about whacking you over the head with this if you continue this borderline sexual harassment, I warned, running my hand up and down the rolling pin suggestively.
I'm gonna have to ask you not to do that if you're serious about my peeling apples here, he said, eyes widening.
I never joke about pie, Simon. I sprinkled a little more flour on the marble. He was silent while he watched me pat out the pie crust, breathing through his mouth.
So what are you gonna do with that? He asked, his voice low.
With this? I asked, leaning over the board and perhaps arching my back a little as I did.
Mm-hmm, he replied.
I'm going to roll this crust out, see? Like this? I teased again, thrusting the pin back and forth over the dough, making sure I arched my back each time and the forward action pushed my girls together.
Oh, my, he whispered, and I grinned naughtily at him. You gonna be okay over there, big guy?
This is just the top crust. I still need to work on my bottom, I said over my shoulder. His hands clutched at the edge of the counter.
Apples, apples, gonna peel me some apples, he told himself, and turned away toward the colander filled with apples in the sink.
Let me just get you the peeler, I said, coming up behind him and pressing myself against him as I curled around his side to grab the vegetable peeler from the other sink. This was fun.
Peeling apples, just peeling apples. Didn't feel your boobs, no, no, not me, he chanted as I openly laughed at him. Here, peel this, I said, taking pity on him and removing myself from his cooking space.
I might have sniffed his T-shirt.
Did you just sniff me? He asked, keeping himself turned away.
I might have, I admitted, going back to my rolling pin, which I squeezed mightily.
I thought so.
Hey, if you can sniff, I can sniff. I shot back, taking out my sexual frustration on a defenseless pâté brisé.
Only fair. So, how do I rate?
Good. Very good, actually. Downy?
Bounce. I lost my downy ball, he confessed.
I laughed, and we continued to roll and peel. Within 15 minutes... we had a bowl full of peeled and sliced apples, a perfectly rolled out pie crust, and we'd both consumed our first glass of wine.
Okay, what's next?
He asked, wiping up flour and generally tidying. Now we spice things up and add a little citrus, I answered, lining up cinnamon and nutmeg, my sugar bowl, and a lemon.
Okay, where do you want me? He asked,
taking care to show me his hands, now covered in flour. Visions ran through my head, and I had to bite back an invitation to show him exactly where I wanted him.
First, dust yourself off, and then we'll get started. You can be my assistant.
He looked around for a dish towel, and I turned to look for the one I knew I'd left out. I'd already started for it on the counter when I felt two very strong and very specifically placed hands on my ass. Hi, I said, freezing in place.
Hi,
he answered cheerfully, not releasing his hands. Explain yourself, please, I ordered, trying not to notice how my heart was trying to leave my body by way of my mouth.
You told me to find something to clean my hands with, he stuttered,
trying hard not to laugh as he gave each cheek a little squeeze.
And you took that to mean my ass?
I laughed back and turned to face him, removing my hands with my own.
What can I say?
I take liberties with my neighbors, he replied,
his eyes darting back and forth now between my lips and my eyes.
"We have a pie to make, mister. I'll thank you to remember your manners. No one touches my ass without an invitation."
I giggled, still holding his hands. I felt his thumb trace little circles on the inside of my palm, and my head got swimmy. This guy was going to be the death of me.
"Get over there, Hansy, and behave," I instructed.
He smirked and turned away, which gave me the opportunity to mutter, "Oh, my Jesus Lord," to no one in particular before meeting him back at the Apple Bowl.
"Okay, you do what I tell you. Got it?"
I said, sprinkling sugar into the bowl.
"Got it."
I started tossing the apples with my hands, and Simon followed my instructions to the letter. When I asked for more sugar, he sugared. When I asked for more cinnamon, he complied. When I asked him to squeeze the lemon, he lemoned so well I had trouble keeping my tongue in my mouth and off his throat. I tossed and tasted, and when they were finally right, I lifted a wedge to his mouth.
"Open up," I said, and he leaned in.
I placed an apple on his tongue, and he snapped his mouth shut before I had a chance to remove my fingers. He let his lips close around too, and I slowly withdrew them, feeling his tongue wrap around them delicately and deliberately.
"Delicious," he said softly.
"Gah," I answered, eyes crossing a little at the sex on two legs displayed in front of me. He chewed.
"Sweet, sweet Caroline."
"Gah," I managed again. Brain knew this was bad. Heart was beating out of our chest.
"Good for you?" he asked,
that knowing smile treading dangerously close to smirk territory.
"Good for me," I answered, on fire after the finger lacio.
"Truus schmoose, harem schmarem. Who cared if there was no actual O? I needed to be in contact with this man in the very worst way. My sexual wall had been hit, and as I prepared to rip the clothes from his body, throw him to the ground and ride him amid a pile of apples and cinnamon with only a rolling pin to guide us, my phone rang.
Thank you, Jesus.
I looked at the blue-eyed devil and launched myself across the room, away from the brain-scrambling voodoo. I saw his face as I ran, and he looked a little disappointed.
"Girl, what are you up to tonight?"
Mimi screeched into the phone. I held it away from my ear before the bleeding started. Mimi had three sound levels: normal loud, excited loud, and drunky loud. She was leaving excited and on her way to drunky.
"I'm getting ready to have dinner. Where are you?" I asked,
nodding at Simon, who had started pouring the apples into the pie dish.
"I'm out for drinks with Sophia."
"What are you doing?" she screamed.
"I just told you, getting ready to have dinner," I laughed.
Simon came out into the living room with the pie in his hands.
"Should I put this in the oven?" he asked.
"Hang on, Mimi." "Not yet. I still need to brush it with a little cream," I told him, and he ducked back into the kitchen.
"Caroline, that was a man. Who was that? Who are you having dinner with? And what are you brushing with cream?"
she fired at me, her voice growing even louder.
"Settle down. My goodness, you're loud."
"I'm having dinner with Simon, and we're making an apple pie," I explained, which he immediately screamed out to Sophia.
"Shit,"
I muttered as I heard the phone yanked away from Mimi.
"Reynolds, what are you doing? Are you baking pies with your neighbor? Are you naked?"
Sophia yelled, taking her turn to grill me.
"Okay, no, and you all need to seriously settle down."
"Hanging up now," I yelled over her yelling at me.
I could hear Mimi squealing nasty things about pies and cream. Sophia was in the middle of threatening me not to hang up on her when I did just that. I sighed and went to find Simon with his hands full of pie. I snorted in spite of myself.
"Oh, my God, that's so good," I whimpered, closing my eyes and losing myself to the sensations. "I knew you'd like it, but I had no idea you'd enjoy it this much," he whispered, staring at me with rapt attention.
"Stop talking. You're going to ruin it for me," I moaned, stretching and feeling myself respond to everything he was giving me.
"Did you want another one?"
he offered, raising up on his elbows. "If I have another, I won't be able to walk tomorrow."
"Go ahead. Be a bad girl. You deserve it. I know you want it, Caroline,"
he teased, leaning closer.
"Okay,"
I managed, opening up to him once again. I closed my eyes and heard him fumbling about before putting it in. Sighing as I felt it, I closed my lips around what he offered.
"I've never seen a woman who could take so much in one sitting,"
he marveled, watching me come undone once more.
"Yes, well, you've never met a woman who likes meatballs as much as me,"
I moaned around another mouthful, feeling stuffed beyond belief, but not wanting the meal to end. Simon had just cooked me quite possibly the most perfect meal ever, hitting every single taste bud that needed to be hit. He'd learned how to make the most amazing meatballs from a woman in Naples, and he'd sworn they'd be the best I'd ever had. After no less than 7 jokes about balls and mouths, I had to agree they were the best balls I had ever had in my mouth.
"God, he gave great meatball."
I then proceeded to eat almost a pound of pasta myself, as well as all of my meatballs, plus half of his. I insisted he eat the last one, but he refused and brought the perfection that was his meatball to my willing mouth. Simon was a great host, insisting that I sit, drink wine, and watch rather than help. He entertained me with stories about his travels as he got everything ready, and while the food was simple, it was good.
"Noni made me promise if she showed me how to make her polpette, I would only serve them with her special sauce. If I dared serve these with a jar of Prego, she would cross the ocean to break her wooden spoon against my backside."
"She made you call her Noni?" I laughed, leaning back in my chair and unbuttoning the top button on my jeans.
I had no shame.
I'd eaten an obscene amount.
"You know what Noni means?"
he asked, surprised. "I had an Italian great-grandmother. She insisted everyone call her Noni." I laughed again when his eyes went to my hands massaging my stomach.
"You gonna be okay there?"
He raised his eyebrows as he got up to clear.
"Yep, just need to breathe a little,"
I groaned, pulling myself up from the table.
No, you don't have to help,"
he said, rushing to my side and grabbing my plate. Oh no, I wasn't. I was going to drop this off and pass out on that couch right there," I said, nodding toward the living room.
"You go relax. Anyone who just had that many balls in her mouth deserves a rest,"
he teased, and I flicked his ear.
"I said no more ball jokes. You've had your fun, now let me go die in peace."
I shuffled into the living room. I really had made quite a little piggy of myself, but it was seriously good. I reclined and popped open another button on my jeans, relaxing into the cushions and replaying some of the finer points of the evening. Watching Simon cook was, in a word, hot. He was really at home in a kitchen, his earlier fussing about with the pie aside. Even his salad, simple greens dressed lightly with lemon and olive oil, salt, pepper, and good parmesan, was easy and perfect. "Pink Himalayan salt, thank you very much," he said proudly, producing a bag from his pantry. He'd brought it back from one of his many trips and had me taste a little before sprinkling it on the salad. Could have been pretentious, but it fit Simon. The many facets of this guy were astounding. My earliest assumptions about him were proving to be completely wrong, as assumptions tend to be. I could hear him tending to the dishes, and as much as I probably should have gone to help him, I simply couldn't remove myself from the couch. I snuggled on my side and looked around his living room again, my eyes drawn back to the tiny bottles of sand from all over the world. I marveled at how traveled he was, and how he seemed to enjoy it still. I gazed at the pictures of the woman in Bora Bora, her dark, beautiful skin and the smooth planes of her body, and thought about how different the three of the women in his harem were. Oops, make that two, now that Katie/Spanx was with her new man. Suddenly I could smell the apple pie and heard the oven door clank shut. I'd put it in his oven as soon as we came over so it would be ready after dinner.
"Don't you dare try to serve me pie now. I am stuffed, I tell you, stuffed," I yelled. "Quiet, it's just cooling," he scolded, coming around the corner from the kitchen. "You're gonna have to scooch over, sister. It's movie time," he instructed, pushing me with his big toe as I struggled to sit up straight.
"What is it that we're watching?"
"The Exorcist," he whispered, turning off the light on the end table and leaving the room quite dark.
"Are you freaking kidding me?" I screeched, leaning over him to turn it back on. "Don't be a wuss. You're watching it," he hissed, turning it back off. "I'm not a wuss, but there is stupid and not stupid, and stupid is watching a movie like The Exorcist with the lights off. That's just asking for trouble," I hissed back, turning it back on. It was starting to look like a disco in here.
"Okay, I'll make you a deal. Lights off, but,"
he shushed me with his finger as he saw me begin to interrupt,
"if you get too scared, lights go back on. Deal?"
I was still leaning across him on my way to turn the light back on again when I noticed how close I was to his face, and how I was angled across him like a girl wanting to get a spanking. And I knew he was capable of delivering one. "Fine," I huffed as the opening credits came on. I returned to a normal seated position. He smiled triumphantly and gave me a thumbs up.
"If you show me that thumb one more time, I'll bite it off," I growled, pulling an afghan off the back of the couch and curling it protectively around me.
1 minute into the movie, and I was already spooked. I was tense from that moment on, and any idea I might have had about girls being ridiculous around guys when they watched scary movies went by the wayside when Regan peed herself at the dinner party. By the time the priest came for a little visit, I was practically sitting on Simon's lap. My right hand had a death grip on his thigh, and I was viewing the movie through the holes in the afghan, which I had draped entirely over my head. "I actually, literally, hate you for making me watch this movie," I whispered in his ear, which was right in my face as I refused to leave any space between us. I'd even accompanied him to the bathroom earlier when we took a break. He insisted I stay out in the hallway, but I stood just outside the door, eyes glancing around furtively, still with the Afghan over my head.
"Do you want me to stop? I don't want you to have nightmares," he whispered back, his eyes on the screen.
"Just no banging on the walls for a few nights, please. I won't be able to take it," I said, looking at him through one of my eye holes.
"Have you heard any banging lately?" he asked, rolling his eyes, as he did every time he looked at me with the ridiculous Afghan on my head.
"No, I haven't, actually."
"Why is that?" I asked.
He took a breath.
He started, and then the most maniacal, scary noises started coming from the TV, and we both jumped. "Okay, maybe this movie is a little scary. You want to sit closer?" he asked, pressing pause on the remote.
"I thought you'd never ask," I cried, launching myself fully into his lap and settling between his thighs.
"Do you want some Afghan?" I offered,
and he laughed.
"No, I can take it like a man. You stay under there, though," he teased.
I narrowed my eyes at him through the eye holes and poked one finger through the weave.
"Guess which finger this is," I said, waving it at him.
"Shh, movie," he answered, wrapping his arms around me and pulling me back against his chest. He was warm and strong and powerful, but absolutely no match for terror that was The Exorcist.
What had we been talking about?
Now I couldn't think about any walls banging except the one Regan was currently banging the shit out of and spraying down with pea soup. We watched the rest of that damn movie wound around each other like pretzels, and he finally succumbed to the false security that an Afghan eye hole can provide.
Click, click, click. "What the hell is that?" Click, click, click. "Oh, no."
I lay paralyzed in my bed, every light in my entire apartment blazing.
Click, click, click. I pulled the covers up higher, covering my face up to my eyes, which kept a constant vigil around the bedroom.
Brain knew we were safe and secure, but also kept replaying scenes from that terrible, terrible movie, making it impossible to shut off for the night and go to sleep. Nerves had everything on lockdown, blazing a trail of fiery adrenaline throughout my body. I hated Simon with every fiber of my being in that moment. I also wished he was here.
Click, click, click.
What is that?
Click, click.
Nothing. Then Clive leaped on the bed and I screamed bloody murder. Clive puffed out his tail and hissed at me, wondering why the hell Mommy was screaming at him, I'm sure. The click, click, click was his goddamned kitty hangnail. My phone vibrated an instant later, shaking the entire nightstand and eliciting another scream from me. It was Simon.
"What the hell is wrong? Why are you screaming? Are you okay?"
he yelled when I answered, and I could hear him through the phone and through the wall.
"Get your ass over here right now, you motherfucking scary movie pusher!"
I seethed and hung up. I pounded on the wall and ran out to unlock the door, in much the same way I'd run up the last few steps of the basement stairs when I was a kid. I hightailed it back into my room, jumping the last few feet and landing in the center of my bed. I wrapped the covers around me and peered out, waiting. He knocked, and I heard the door push open.
"Caroline," he called.
"Back here," I yelled, sad that I'd been reduced to this. but I was glad to see him.
I brought the pie, he said with an embarrassed grin. And this, he added, producing the Afghan from behind his back.
Thanks. I smiled at him from behind my pillow shield. A few minutes later, we were settled on my bed, each balancing a plate and a glass of milk. We'd been too full, then too terrified to eat pie earlier. Clive and his phantom hangnail retired to the other room after rolling his eyes at Simon and swishing his tail.
How old are you? I asked, cutting into my pie.
28. How old are you?
26. We are 28 and 26 years old, and terrified of a movie, I mused, poking in a bite.
The pie was good. I wouldn't say I'm terrified, he countered. Spooked? Yes. But I only came over to stop you from screaming.
And to taste my pie, I added, winking.
Shut it, you, he warned. And then he went ahead and tasted my pie. Jesus, that's good, he breathed, eyes closed as he chewed. I know.
What is it about apples and homemade pie crust? Is there anything better?
If we were eating this naked, then it would be better, he grinned, opening one eye.
No one is getting naked here, buddy. Just eat your pie. I pointed at his plate with my fork. We chewed.
I feel better, I added a few minutes later, drinking my milk.
Me too. Not too spooked anymore.
He smiled as I took his plate and set it on the nightstand. I sighed contentedly and lay back against my pillows, sated and less scared.
So, I gotta ask, James Brown? I mean, James Brown?
He laughed, and I kicked him as he lay down next to me. We turned on our sides to face each other, arms curling under the pillows.
I know, I know. I can't believe you held it in as long as you did. I know you've been dying to make jokes since last night. Seriously. Who is this guy? He asked.
He's a new client.
Ah, got it, he said,
looking pleased. And an old boyfriend, I added, watching for his reaction.
I see. New client, but old boyfriend. Wait, the lawyer? He asked,
trying to keep his expression neutral, but failing.
Yep. Haven't seen him in a few years. How's that gonna work?
Don't know yet. We'll see. I really didn't know how things were going to go with James. I was glad to see him, but it was going to be tough to keep things professional if he wanted more. And every instinct I had told me he wanted more. In the past, he'd had more control over me than I was comfortable relinquishing. I'd found myself sucked into the gravitational pull that was James Brown, lawyer, not godfather of soul.
Anyway, we're just going to be working together. It'll be a great job for me. He wants his entire place redone.
I sighed, already planning the pallet. I rolled onto my back and stretched. I'd really abused my stomach tonight and was starting to get sleepy.
I don't like him,
Simon said suddenly, after a long pause. I turned and saw him scowling.
You don't even know him. How could you possibly not like him? I laughed. I just don't, he said,
now turning his gaze to mine and unleashing the power of the baby blues.
Oh, please, you're just a stinky boy.
I laughed, ruffling his hair.
Wrong move. It sure was soft. I don't stink. You said yourself I was April fresh,
he protested, lifting his arm and sniffing.
Yes, Simon, you smell delicious, I deadpanned, sniffing the air around me. He left his arm up higher on the pillow, and I knew if I rolled just a little, I could slide right on into the nook. He looked at me, raising his eyebrows ever so slightly. Was he thinking what I was thinking? Did he want to nook me? Did I want to nook him? Oh, the hell with it. I'm coming into the nook, I announced, and went full snuggle. Head nestled in, left arm over chest, right arm tucked under his pillow. Legs I kept to myself. I wasn't a total fool. Well, hello there, he said, sounding surprised. Then he curled himself around me immediately. I sighed again, wrapped in boy and voodoo. What brought this on, friend? He whispered into my hair, and I shivered. Delayed reaction to Linda Blair. I need some nook time. Friends can nook, can't they? Sure. But are we friends who can nook? He asked, tracing circles on my back. Him and his demon finger circles. I can handle it. You? I held my breath. I can handle just about anything, but... He started and then stopped. What? What were you going to say? I asked, leaning up to look at him. One piece of hair uncurled from my ponytail and fell down between us. Slowly and with great care, he pushed it back behind my ear. Let's just say that if you were wearing that pink nightie, you'd be in a heap of trouble. Well, it's a good thing we're just friends then, right? I forced myself to say. Friends. Yes. He stared into my eyes. I breathed in. He breathed out. We traded actual air. Just nook me, Simon, I said quietly, and he grinned. Come on back down here, he said, and coaxed me onto his chest. I slid down, resting where I could hear his heartbeat. He folded the afghan over us, and I noticed again how soft it was. It had served me well tonight, this afghan. I love this afghan, but I have to say, it doesn't really fit your apartment. The cool dude motif you have going on, I mused. It was orange and pea green and very retro. He was silent, and I thought maybe he had fallen asleep. It was my mom's, he said quietly, and his grip on me became infinitesimally tighter. There was nothing to say after that. Simon and I slept together that night, with every light in the entire place on. Clive and his hangnail stayed away. Chapter 11. I woke up a few hours later, startled by the warmth of the body next to me, which was decidedly bigger than the cat usually nestled against my side. I rolled carefully onto my back and away from Simon so I could see him. I could see him just fine as the lamps, along with all my other lights, continued to blaze away into the night, fighting back the evils of that awful movie. I rubbed my eyes and inspected my bedmate. He lay on his back, arms curled as though I was still in them, and I thought of how good it felt to nook with Simon. But I shouldn't be nooking with Simon. Brain knew better. Nerves were in agreement. That was definitely a very, very slippery slope. And though the images of climbing a slippery Simon that immediately came to mind were far from innocent,
I pushed them aside. I looked away and noticed the terribly wonderful Afghan tangled between his legs, and mine, for that matter. It had been his mom's. Heart broke each time I thought of his sweet, timid voice sharing that little nugget with me. He didn't know I'd talked to Jillian about his past, that I knew his parents were no longer alive. The idea that he still clung to his mother's Afghan was inexorably sweet, and once again, my heart broke open. I was close with my parents. They still lived in the same house where I'd grown up, in a small town in Southern California. They were great parents, and I saw them as often as I could, which is to say holidays and an occasional weekend. A typical 20-something, I enjoyed my independence. But my parents were there when I needed them, always there. The idea that I would someday have to walk this earth without their anchor and misguided guidance made me wince, to say nothing of losing both of them at only 18. I was glad Simon seemed to have good friends and such a powerful advocate as Benjamin watching out for him. But as close as friends and lovers could be, there was something about belonging to someone completely that gave you roots, roots you sometimes needed when the world battled against you. Simon stirred slightly in his sleep, and I watched him again. He murmured something that I couldn't quite pick out, but it sounded a little like meatballs. I smiled and allowed my fingers to slip into his hair, feeling the soft silk tousled on my pillow. God, he gave good meatball. As I stroked his hair, my mind wandered to a place where meatballs flowed endlessly and there was pie for days. I giggled to myself as sleepiness began to return, and I nestled back down into the nook. As I felt the comfort that only warm man arms could provide, a little alarm went off in my head, warning me not to get too close. I had to be careful. Clearly, we were both divinely attracted to each other, and in another space and time, the sex would have been ringing out across the land and around the clock. But he had his harem, and I had my hiatus, not to mention that I did not have my O. So friends we would remain. Friends who meatball. Friends who nook. Friends who were headed to Tahoe very soon. I pictured Simon soaking in a hot tub with Lake Tahoe spread out in all its glory behind him. Which sight was actually more glorious remained to be seen. I settled back to sleep, rousing only slightly when Simon snuggled me a little closer. And even though it was barely above a whisper, I heard it. He sighed my name. I smiled as I slipped back to sleep. The next morning, I felt a persistent poking at my left shoulder. I brushed it away, but it continued. "Clive, stop it, you asshole," I moaned, hiding my head under the covers. I knew he wouldn't stop until I fed him, ruled by his stomach, that one. Then I heard a distinctly human laugh. Quiet, and definitely not Clive. My eyes sprang open, and the night before came back to me in a rush. The horror, the pie, the nook. I reached backward with my right foot, sliding it along the bed until I felt it stop against something warm and hairy. Although I was now more sure than ever it wasn't Clive, I poked with my toe, inching my way higher, until I heard another chuckle. "Wallbanger?" I whispered, not wanting to flip over. True to form, I was spread-eagled diagonally across the entire bed, head on one side, feet practically on the other. The one and only a delicious voice whispered in my ear. My toes and lower Caroline curled.
Shit.
I rolled onto my back to take in the damage. He was huddled in the one corner my body had allowed him. My bed-sharing habits had not improved at all.
You sure can fill a bed,